Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing. Hello, mate.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Very good. We're going to, it's a special day today.
I know. We're filming.
I know. But
what do you call this?
This is a vodcast.
Vodcast.
Yeah. So for those of you that are watching or listening to us on the train or having a run listening to the podcast, you can actually go home and actually watch our very special episode today. But we've got a great guest on today, Ben.
We do, the Buyer's Agent of the Year.
Buyer's Agent of the Year, Rich and Harvey. Hello, Rich.
Bye. Thanks very much, Bryce. Thanks, Ben. Great to be on the couch with you.
Always wanted to
sit here next to you, guys.
Oh, mate,
so
here you are. You know, it's happened.
Bit of the wisdom rubbing
we're
off.
We've flown you down from Sydney.
All the very best experts in Australia sit next to you on that couch,
Fantastic.
Ben. So you certainly fit in. But for those of you who don't know Rich, he is the president of the Real Estate Buyers Agency Association of Australia. As Ben mentioned, he is the Buyer's Agent of the Year. He also runs a very, very good business out of Sydney called Property Buyer, and likes to do a little bit of economics too, don't you? You've got a bit of a part-time dabbling in being an economist, right?
Well, that was my past life, actually, yeah. So when people hear about that, when I read my newsletters and commentary in the media about various things, all talking property, so yeah.
But the bottom line here, folks, is I've got to lift my game because we've got the president of the REBA, we've got the chair of PIPA, and I'm the chair of nothing. So clearly I've got to go and have
a good long, hard look at myself.
Where are you highly recommended?
Highly commended, yes.
Highly commended, behind, there he is.
Behind the chief over there, so and very well deserved too, mate, because you are doing a great job as a buyer's agent. But we'll tell us a little bit about your backstory. You've got Property Buyer as a company, but you've been an investor for a long time. So how'd you get into it?
Well, how did I get into it? Look, I've always had an interest in property. Ever since I was a young boy, I always sort of, you know, looked at my mum and dad's house and, hey, they built it. And I thought, look, a lot of people make money in property. And I thought it'd be fascinating to get into that. So I didn't start in property. I actually started in government working as an environmental economist. So my past life was I did a bachelor's and then a master's of economics.
Yep.
Didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. So I worked as a senior economist in government for a number of years trying to save the world. I was very green at the time, actually a greenie.
Oh, there we go.
Not green as in immature.
Sort of like to have the long hair. And the
I wish
hair.
I did. I always wanted a flat top. You know? So I worked in government crunching numbers on how to save the environment. Did a lot of work for the Environment Protection Authority in water pollution and air pollution controls. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to put values on intangible items. So one thing I learned at the EPA was how to value the quality of life, how to value improved air quality, better water quality. So I had a very interesting role there in actually valuing the environment. So not many people were doing it. And so we started some landmark research, and that was really good. But on the side, I got a bit bored with that. On the side, I started investing in property. And I started teaching people around me how to invest in property. And I was one of the few people within my government agency to pay zero tax because I had all these properties. And people would go, Rich, what are you doing with this property thing? And I thought, well, there's a niche to educate, help people just like you guys do to really get a portfolio going. So that was sort of the genesis of my buyer's agency way back then. And then I made the radical decision to cut ties with a safe wage and start my own business and really help people in the property game.
Fantastic.
How long ago was the measuring of quality of life, and is there anything that we can learn from from the quality of the air around us?
One of the great things that came out in the late 90s was European standards for fuel control. So the Euro standards came in, and in particular diesel fuel and diesel quality dramatically improved. Like the trucks used to see blowing out all that fine particulate matter, that would get into people's lungs and cause severe sicknesses in some people. So they've improved that quality now, so we would measure the quality of life. And I do remember it was for PM10, particulate matter with a micron of 10, every tonne of PM10 that's removed from the atmosphere improved health quality by $42,000. So there was the number.
There was a dollar figure to it.
Can you believe this, mate? We're talking about bricks and mortar. We're talking about air quality.
We're doing climate economy, the whole thing. So from the analysis that you did, and obviously you put a dollar value on it, what sort of technical analysis did you bring to your property investing?
Well, same sort of thing. I actually, we'll come to this later too, but I picked up a disease doing that. It was called paralysis of analysis. So I would always apply, you know, I was very...
We all have that at
exactly.
one point in our life.
I was a very conservative investor. I think I was always afraid, always taught that you've got to pay down your home loan first before you do anything else in life.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bit of a fallacy. I think that if you go down that route, and I think Paul Clitheroe used to really advocate that through his money show, pay down all your non-deductible debt first and then think about investing. Well, by the time you do that, you're kind of 55 and you've missed the boat. Mm. You know, you've missed two or three property cycles. Mm-hmm. So why not have a strategy where you can start building a property portfolio carefully as well as pay down your loan at a slower rate, but fantastic, still pay it down. I think that's really my mantra and what I learned very early on from my analysis. But, you know, I use spreadsheets and all sorts of things to track what I do. I'd always look at the rent return and what the potential growth factors would be. So I bring that to my business today.
Fantastic.
Mm. Take us back to that that time when you decided that you were going to buy your first investment property, taking a few deep breaths. What was the property? And if you had your time over again, would you still buy that same property?
Good question. Yes, I would have bought the same property. At the time, I didn't know nearly what I knew then. I was referred to a property and I bought an off-the-plan property through a financial planner who was obviously getting a kickback I didn't know about. But it was a two-bedroom unit in Alexandria we really hesitated about buying, particularly my wife as well. She was very nervous about buying it and thought, Rich, what are we doing? We've almost paid the loan of our home now. What are we going into more debt for? And all that discussion about debt. But look, at the end of the day, we procrastinated for many months, eventually signed on the line, bought it, and it did exceptionally well. Yeah. So, you know, it's been a great renter. It's always performed in a great area. So,
Which is really, and so again, you know, we obviously, you have similar views on high density and medium density accommodation that we do in terms of lack of scarcity. But there are examples where it can go okay.
Well, at the time of when we bought it too, it was a time when the market was not rocketing along.
Yep.
It was a time where there wasn't any sort of massive spike in building approvals.
Yep.
So it was a time where there was a need for more rental accommodation in an area that was being gentrified.
Yep.
So we don't own that. We actually sold that property at the right time and moved out. And so I think there's a time to also hold a property and there can be a time to sell a property. Okay, so we decided to move it on at, and put our money into something else that grows faster.
Fantastic.
So roughly how long ago was that first one?
Oh, gosh, testing my memory now.
80s, 90s?
No, 90s. Probably mid-90s now,
Because there wasn't a lot of information out there at the time,
no.
Back in the 90s, not like what it is now. Who did you used to lean on back then for your, you know, if it's virtual mentorship or if there was actually a person that you used to get some mentorship from? Who were the people that
I would go to a lot of different seminars. There wasn't any one person at the time. I would go to a lot of different events. And I do what I do with a lot of things in life, and eat the fruit and spit out the pips.
Mm.
And that means you get the good stuff, and then the stuff that seems dubious or a bit off beam, you leave that alone. So I didn't sort of rely on anyone. I read a lot of books. I was working in the city, and I had a goal of reading one book a week. So I would read one book. I had about a 45-minute journey each way.
Yep.
And I educated myself on property like you wouldn't believe. I would constantly consume information, consume magazines. There wasn't a lot online at the time. You know, there's not nearly as much as there is today. So it was a lot more difficult to get educated.
I love that analogy. I reckon that's a ripper. Because some you can go to, some of those seminars that we used to go to, I did the same, you know, and on my journey. So what's the definition of a really small bit of fruit and a really big pip? Because there's just a little layer of fruit on there.
So there's no watermelons. It's
some
all
of them
apricots.
We did go to were rubbish, weren't they? They
That's
were
right.
Just, you know, like, you might have a little bit of takeaway, but some of them you're absolutely right. Nice big.
Some of them were a big upsell to a personal development program. So they were sort of, you know, join. You know, you've paid $1,000 to come to this event, but come to our one. It's $20,000 going to transform your life, and you know, whatever. But and it's good for some people that need that inspiration. I think the thing I learned was stay the course. And valuations, learning about valuing your property and recycling your equity. That was the best thing I got out of those seminars.
So the technical analysis?
Correct, yeah.
So let's explore that a bit. Tell the listeners how we do technical analysis.
The technical analysis, Ben, one way we do it is we look at a number of factors, of the physical features of the property.
Yep.
So we look at the land size.
Yep.
We look at the land content of the purchase price,
yep,
the building price, any depreciation left. We look at the rent return, the future capital growth, the historical growth.
Yeah.
So we look at those parameters, vacancy rate. I mean, these days you can get elements like online search demand. You can actually get that sort
of...
You wouldn't... Previously, you couldn't get that.
No, we couldn't get any of that.
So there's a lot more information you can get these days to really help indicate whether a property is going to perform.
Fantastic.
Now, we've had discussions before because what the listeners may not know is we've been at the same expos now for the last 5 to 10 years, and we've often talked about researching is not searching. So how do the everyday investors get access to good quality research intel, which is more than just checking out the portals and seeing what's available to.
So just to the first point, Bryce, I think we should define what research and search means. As we've often, you've heard me speak at my seminars and you like that point, is we find a lot of people will just jump straight into searching. They go to Domain and go to real estate and look for their dream property or their dream investment. They miss that first hurdle of research and what to buy and where to buy. So you redefine, just take a step back, and research is identifying your strategy. It's identifying the parameters of the property you're looking for and where it's going to deliver the growth in you that you need to achieve an outcome. So that's the research. How do you find that information? Well, a number of ways. Yes, you can find some on realestate.com. There's some pretty good comparable sales. To really dig deep, there's a couple of portals that we use. One is Residex. That's often a good one. That goes, you know, historical growth information is very, very good there. SQM for vacancy rates, they're very, very good. We use some magazines like API Magazine, which is quite strong.
So the data stuff in there.
So RP Data and RP Data CoreLogic.
Your investment property magazine.
Your investment property magazine.
Data in there as well.
Exactly. Things like DSR score, demand supply ratio. Some scores there that identify certain indicators in the market. So there's a number of different portals you can go to. The next question is, how do you interpret all that information? And I've seen some people, we've had lots of clients that are extremely analytical, get themselves really confused. We've even got one client at the moment trying to look at the per square meter rate of the land in one suburb versus the next land and suburb. But it's not going to work. It's not a cut and dry thing.
No, it's not, it's not like New York apartments where you can go per square meter. We're talking very different attributes for properties, even in the same street.
That's right.
If it was that simple, we would have all done it.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like, we've all got the, you know, we're spending lots of money on our research. We know what we're sort of looking for, but there's no set formula. So demand-supply ratio is obviously a terrific one in terms of looking at that, but it also needs to be overlaid with the sentiment, the human interest and human behaviour drivers that come into that. So
that's right.
So, you know, coming back to that technical analysis question, it was that. I mean, I can do that sort of cost per square metre of land, and I can do cost per square metre of build, put those two things together, and I'm meant to come up with what it should sell for. It doesn't work that way. And one street back, and that's in a little valley, and so that bit of land that's only 50 metres away from that bit of land is different. This bit of land's got city views. This bit of land 300 metres down the road doesn't. Yeah, all makes a difference.
And one of the big things, we're really talking about fundamental analysis now, it's that, and that buyer sentiment. If you can buy into a market that has a very high proportion of owner-occupiers, that's actually quite a safe market to buy in. Because owner-occupiers typically hold their properties for longer periods of time and are prepared to pay more for it than the average investor.
They buy with their heart, not their head.
Exactly right.
Mate, if you've forgiven your parents for putting such pressure on you, because, like, if you had to become poor, the poor Harvey versus Rich Harvey, you were destined for it.
But, how long have you been working on that one for?
Mate, I've been thinking about it for the last 6 seconds, just waiting for a breath. Just waiting for a breath. But so you're the president of the Real Estate Buyers Agency Association.
Correct.
Tell us a bit about what drew you to that role. And, you know, I guess buyers agents have only become really popular in the last decade. So how do you think that that organisation can help the consumer when they're buying?
I joined REBA, I think it was back in about 2002, when it was in its infancy. There was probably less than 10 members at that time. Wow. So it was a very small, embryonic group who got like-minded individuals who saw there's a niche in the market to independently represent the buyer. There's selling agents being paid by the vendor, but buying agents really hadn't been heard of. So it was an embryonic early stage. So I was attracted to it because obviously I wanted to network with like-minded individuals, but I also had a passion to see standards raised in the industry. And to make sure that people get ethical advice. I guess one of the other drivers was my brother got stung by one of those two-tier marketing guys up in the Gold Coast. You know, they flew him up and pressured him to sign on the Sunday and blah, 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 and anyway lost some money in a deal. But so to see your family member kind of suffer from that is kind of really annoying. So it set me on a path of making sure that our clients get good quality advice. And the reason I went to REBA, I think I've got a lot to offer in that role. So I thought, look, I've been a member of REBA. I was the state representative for a number of years. And I thought, look, I could really love to help elevate the status of buyer's agents. And
give a bit back.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's great. It's good stuff. So, and then the business itself, in terms of, tell us a little about the business.
So my business is propertybuyer.com.au. We're exclusive buyer agents. We have a number of different divisions within the business. The main ones are home buyers and investors. So we We'll find homes for our clients. We'll find investment properties. We also do commercial properties.
Okay.
We do high-end prestige, and we do development site sourcing, which is another add-on to our business
as well. How many in the team?
I've got 12 in the team in total.
Wow, yeah,
and each buyer's agent works in a specific geographic area. You need a local expert. That's the big thing you've got to have, is a local expert that knows the market. You can't have one buyer's agent that covers the whole of Australia. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, hard work.
You've got to use a local buyer's agent. And a couple of things that are really key for me is that the depth of relationship you have and the knowledge of a local market is critical to the success of your client's outcome.
Yep.
So working with a buyer's agent that has a really good local contacts is going to deliver a much better outcome than someone that's fairly new to an area.
Okay.
Mm. How did you go during the most recent Sydney boom? And I know that they've had the second run at it of late, so with clearance rates up at 80%, which is, you know, compared to this time last year, was quite low. How did you go during that time? Because it's an interesting time to be a buyer's agent during a boom. Cause
look, it has been.
The real estate agent is just effectively press hard four copies, and they just sort of, you know, it's not the same as when the market's in equilibrium, and it makes it tougher for you.
Look, great question, Bryce, a much harder market to operate in. So I guess to answer your question, we've had to operate with greater speed, and we've also had to recalibrate our expectations on pricing.
Yeah.
So let's unpack that a bit. So the way we work with speed is it's about getting access to the properties first to market, even before they get on market. Mm-hmm. We get access to a lot of off-market properties, and that gives the clients an advantage. When they're on market, you're going to have not just four people attending the auction, but 10 or 12 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to get offers accepted prior is one strategy. Often the vendor just will not have a bar of it, the agent won't have a bar of it, and you have to go to auction.
Mm-hmm.
So getting your client primed to pay a fair price, not a ridiculous over-the-top, but the best price that they're prepared to walk away with. So there's a lot of coaching and education that goes into deciding a maximum bidding limit.
Yep.
So we were quite unsuccessful at a lot of auctions, which goes to show that we're conservative buyer's agents. Yeah, you wouldn't want to win everyone.
Thing. That's right. But we
did win quite a few, and we used certain tactics, you know, to win those auctions. So it's been challenging. We've just had to make sure that when we're giving clients advice on value in this hot market, that we've got some really strong comparable sales, which we've been able to do.
Because their biggest fear is paying too much.
Correct.
And in a booming market, that often is very difficult to define. And you know, as we talk about, Ben, as you know, if you're playing the long game, it's all about getting A-plus properties in good locations that will deliver in the long term. But I think Sydney in particular is a market that you shouldn't consider not using a buyer's agent, because you know, you got offer and acceptance in Queensland, you got offer and acceptance in South Australia, you've got very high auctions in Melbourne,
That's
but
right.
you still get a bit of. Whereas you guys have this exchange system where you're highly vulnerable for gazumping, and if you don't know local conditions, you are susceptible.
That's right.
Your research obviously will tell you that there are other markets that are doing well. Have you ever entertained the idea of going into other markets and buying? Well, you're buying Queensland.
Well, we do buy in Queensland as well. We're licensed there. Absolutely. We're also buying in Wollongong and Newcastle. We've even bought in some of the regional areas like Mudgee as well over the, not recently, but in past years when those markets
have
been.
And that's a horses for courses thing.
Exactly.
Looking at the client situation and looking for
I mean, right now, in the last 3 years and going forward, I think the Newcastle market and the Wollongong market have a lot of legs.
Yeah.
The Newcastle market in particular, for example, they're spending $500 million.
Half a billion
is the word. Revitalising that whole Sydney centre. There's a light rail going through. So we've been quite successful in buying that market, and the rents are really strong in that Newcastle market. So we believe that's and we're seeing the ripple effect, people deciding to move out of Sydney and wanting to buy know, something where it's a bit more affordable, but to still get lifestyle.
It's the same story as Brisbane, really, isn't it? Like that, you know, we saw after the last boom and period, there was a lot of affordability still available in Brisbane, and
that's
then
right.
people moved into that market.
Because
you're right, I mean, if I'm going to have to commute to Sydney, you know, the CBD in Sydney is going to take me an hour and a half to 2 hours. I'm going to judge whether I'm having a real life or whether I'm just working for the machine.
That's right.
So I'm going to, you know, look at alternative markets. And I think that's what, you know, Queensland is.
You've got a very unique vantage point being in your role as the president of REBA and also being in the Sydney market. And it's quite crowded in terms of buyer's agents. If someone is going to look to use a buyer's agent, how do you suggest they differentiate between which one they should choose?
Great question. So one and first, make sure they're a member of REBA. And they abide by the code of ethics. That's the first tick. Make sure they're licensed. I think make sure they've got relevant experience. You don't want someone that's only been operating for 12 months. You know, I mean, it's hard for the newbies to start off and get credibility, but you want someone that's been in the game quite a period of time. Someone that's got good testimonials. Someone that knows the market intimately in the area you're buying. So ask them how many transactions they do a year, ask them how experienced they are. If they've won awards, you know, that's another good tick in their box.
Yep.
Make sure their agreement is really clear and their fees are very, very transparent. Make sure there's all fees are disclosed and transparent. We work on a fixed fee basis because we don't want any perception of bias in the way that we charge our fees. That's the reason we don't do percentages.
Yep.
And make sure that the expectation of service delivery and what they're going to do for you is very, very clear.
Sorry, Ben, do you have a view on people who don't charge a fixed fee? Have you a percentage of purchase price, which is quite common for buyers?
Look, it can work as long as you're clear on the outcome. So, I mean, you just don't want the percentage to be a thing that sort of motivates the buyer's agent to tell them to pay more than they have to. You know, you want to know by their testimonials as to whether they've got the client's back, really. Yeah. Are they on your side or are they just in it for themselves?
Well, we've gone down the same path as you because if you're in a fixed fee, because if you're on the selling agent side and you've got your home and you want it to be sold for $800,000 and the real estate agent gets $880,000, you're more than happy to pay him a percentage of that extra $80,000 because everyone's won.
That's right.
But on the flip side, if you're on the buyer and you've got a brief of $800,000 and you've come across this really great deal for $880,000, you don't want the client sort of going, is the agenda here for them or me here? And so for us, we avoid that by a flat fee structure.
That's it.
The recommendation on the evidence base, I mean, for owner-occupiers, it's a different story. You know, they're buying wherever they want and we'll go in there and negotiate, you know, try and, because they care too much and they pay too much because then, you know, their emotion gets involved. But in terms of the research piece, do you supply a research piece? So let's take Newcastle, you said before, is of interest to you. So are you doing a detailed research piece in terms of the area and the why?
Correct.
As part of the service offering?
What we do, Ben, when a client first engages us, we do create what's called a buyer's brief.
Yeah.
So we get a very clear strategy on what it is they're going to buy and what they can afford. So we prepare a document that says they're a 500K investor, they've got a growth strategy, and we're going to put them into these areas. We give them some information on the suburbs, the median price, and some recent comparable sales. So that gives them a reference point on any properties we then present subsequently to compare that against.
I think it's really important, isn't it?
The next thing we do is then give them the research piece, as you call it. We give them a report which recommends why we invest in that area. So we'll just talk about the infrastructure of the area, the demographics of the area, and give them some framework of references to why it's a good area to invest in.
And so if you're dealing with any buyer's agent, that's exactly what I think people should be looking for to solidify their their decision, to make sure that they understand that, okay, they've put some work in this. It's not just that, oh, it's too hard to buy over there. They've got some indications and some confidence in this particular market because of these reasons.
Mm.
And it's got to make sense. Mm. So there's plenty of buyer's agents who can put, I mean, and spruikers and marketeers who put decisions backed by research. And then you look at the research and it's, oh, there might be a Westfield shopping centre out here in a few years
that's
from now.
That's right, a couple of years.
You know, there's talk of a train line coming out here in another few years, and there's going to be a freeway close by. You know, you just got to go with the common sense.
Mm. Yeah, a connection of mine always laughs. She says, look, if you put it on a PowerPoint presentation and put it up on the screen, all of a sudden it becomes fact. what's the basis of it? Yeah. So you got to dig that a little bit further. Yeah.
No, you know, I always love to ask the questions of the bad experiences or the, you know, what have been some of the mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think our listeners and viewers always love to hear those. I mean, I'm well documented in one of the magazines for my $500,000 mistake. any of yours that you
I knew you'd ask this hard question. So here we go. I've got to take off my shirt and reveal myself now. Is that right?
Yeah.
No, great, really good question, because I think actually people can learn even more from your mistakes than your successes.
Yep.
You know, even when you're a parent, you know, you're actually going to learn more from your parents' mistakes than their successes. Mm-hmm. And it's how you handle those failures and how you deal with them is also a measure of your character, you know, I believe. But
look, people aren't just interested in win. They want the woe to win story and how you actually can relate and came back out on top.
Look, happy to share a couple of stories. Just to jog my memory, I just wanted to sort of make sure I cover off on this. But one of the things that that I've made a mistake is buying a property with a pool. You know, I told other clients not to do it, and I did it myself. Mm. So,
I'm actually looking at one myself in the pool at the moment. So, but I do say
I did it because I thought I'd get an extra $50 a week rent. I get about $40 a week rent, but the cost, like the filter's blowing, and something else is busted, and this is gone, and you know, it's just a hassle to maintain the thing. So that wasn't a really good, decision for me.
What about? I mean, do you buy up far north or anything like that? Do you go up in Cairns and any of those sort of areas?
I wouldn't buy in Cairns. It's just too remote. But the other mistake I've made is that I'm trying to run before I can walk.
Yeah.
And what I did very early on in my investment career, which basically this is my rags to riches story, I tried to buy an investment property, a development site, and build 26 townhouses when I had two properties behind me, and I virtually wiped myself out.
Wow.
So made lots of mistakes, picked the wrong JV partner, picked the wrong lender. Everything that went wrong could possibly go wrong. So I basically lost 80% of my net worth in that one transaction.
Wow.
And that was just a couple of years before I started my business. Yeah. So from that mistake, I've risen through a whole heap of personal issues have come out of that. But again, just persistence and applying myself, not repeating the same mistakes, we've been able to get beyond that and rebuild a portfolio.
Fantastic. That's
one of the hardest things I've ever done.
That's a ripper story. And it amazes me how many people talk to me about their development stories. I mean, in the magazines, we get the success stories, but how many are out there?
Yeah, I've got one.
Where they've top, yeah, you've got one as well. I haven't. I mean, probably because I'm a little bit more
conservative. You're too wise. You're too smart.
Well, you can just learn from everyone. Let's make the mistakes for you. There you go.
Listen to what we say, because for every one great story, I reckon there's 20 duds out there of people like.
But you can't let that define you. See, I was a bit depressed after that, and you know, I wasn't suicidal or anything, but I was depressed, and I thought, oh, I'm hopeless. I don't know anything. But I thought, no, I don't. I've made some incorrect decisions. Yeah. I have to rectify that, and I've got to move beyond it.
Get busy living.
And it was the other mistake, I guess, was procrastination. I kind of delayed making some proper decisions, and that cost me an opportunity cost.
Yep.
You know, since then, we've done a subdivision. We've rebuilt several houses. We've made lots of great investment decisions, and you know, we've made a lot more than we've ever lost. So you're not going to win. I think we've got to let the listeners know, don't aim for perfection. In every decision, aim for the best. You know, prepare for the worst, but aim for the best.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to put protection in all of your decision making.
Because I always think there's a people call themselves a perfectionist, but I reckon 90% of the people who call themselves perfectionists are actually procrastinators.
Yeah, exactly.
You've actually got to do something first before you can perfect
it. That's right. Yeah.
And we always say that one of the biggest costs that any investor will pay is procrastination. So the fact that you didn't let it, you set back. I mean, even presidents of the United States have been bankrupt before. Yeah, so, as you said, not him personally, but his companies. But that's a good segue into, do you have a view on what impact Donald Trump's election might have on the Australian property market?
Look, a couple of things. Certainly it's created instability in financial, in the share market. You know, they weren't expecting it to happen and it's happened, and it's a bit like the Brexit vote, it didn't go the way everyone expected it to happen. So, I think, unfortunately, what might happen in terms of trade is the biggest implication for Australia. So Trump, I believe, has protectionist policies. So he's going to raise tariffs in the US, which means our exports going out of Australia are not as competitive, particularly for China. If China can't get into the US with its exports, then that slows down demand in China, which slows down demand for Australian materials and resources, which can then impact on our GDP. So the bottom line is if China shrinks and the world trade pool shrinks, everyone loses. You know, I'm all for open trade. He should really get his head ready for this protectionist policy. He's trying to go, oh, let's reinvigorate manufacturing. Well, no, they're not good at that. Outsource that to other countries that are good at it. Do what they're smart at. So I think, to answer your question, it could have an impact on the Australian property market in terms of overall growth and sentiment in the economy.
In terms of clients, because you talked about some mistakes that you've made, what are some of the things where you just shake your head in disbelief when a client comes and they engage your service, but you just look back at their backstory of investing and you just go, what were you thinking? I mean, what are some of the common things you see?
Some of the things I've seen is buying lots off plan and losing lots and lots of money off the plan. Not that off the plan doesn't work, but it only works in very selective circumstances. We actually even had a client recently, and who needs their head read, to be honest with you. I've got to share this story anonymously. But they bought a property. It was just completed, brand new, in Mossman, a two-bedroom unit for, I won't say the price. It went up. They had a 12-month delayed settlement, but were able to get them in there and move into the property under licence.
Yeah.
But the client didn't like the blinds and didn't like some aesthetic thing. The property gone up 100 to 120 grand in value and decided not to settle.
Are you serious?
And I have no idea. I still can't believe it to this day why they didn't change. And then they asked for their feedback. And we said, what is wrong with this lady? Like, it's unbelievable. Totally illogical. Totally illogical. Yeah, so that's a pretty
some
weird
that
one.
You do meet that so, are out there that are, that have mental
so they're throwing
issues,
away, so. Throwing away 100 grand, literally. Literally throwing it away because of some pedantic issue with the apartment. Just crazy.
Look, I mean, and this comes back to that state of wallet, you know, state of your wallet playing with your state of your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like people who paper trade. You know, when they paper trade, it's like, oh, I would have made that call. I would have definitely made that call. Well, you had the opportunity. I mean, some of my mistakes. I remember a block of land in Western Australia, probably 80 metres to the beach. And just before the boom, I'm thinking, it was $180,000 to $200,000 for this block of land. I could put four townhouses on it. Is this going to be all right? Boom comes, goes up to $1.3 million, and I spend every second Christmas over there, so I get to see the block of land every time. So I get a reminder of it each time.
You wouldn't have done it, though. It was a development.
Well, hence the point. So I can sit there and I can say, oh, yeah, I definitely would have done that, or why didn't I do it? Well, I know I didn't do it because I'm risk adverse. Mm. So it didn't meet. And we have people who come to us and say, oh, you know, this is taking a long time or whatever, and I'm not in a position to move. It's like, well, you may have, but would you have done the call? Would you have made the call at that time? If you're paper trading, oh, I've got a great share strategy. Would you actually execute that? So there is definitely that benefit of hindsight.
I often say to clients, as you know, further to that point, is just sort of fast forward 10 years from now and just think of the person at the barbecue who's going to tell us a story about back in 2016, they could have purchased the property for X. Because it's easy to look backwards, isn't it, in the rear vision mirror, but it, very difficult to
look
through.
It brings the point of what you're really calling me is courage and confidence.
Yeah.
And you guys would do it with your clients too. What you do in bringing to a client is confidence and courage in the transaction. A lot of people get scared. They look at a short list and think, oh gosh, I've actually got to commit dollars to this.
Yep.
But you just talk about it and you show examples. And like you say, the history of hindsight, a benefit of hindsight, they're going to do really well.
Often there's a whole lot of stuff that a BA does, in terms of research background, clarifying, they've got to find it, they've got to assess it. But ultimately, if you had to define in two words what a buyer's agent does, it's really say yes.
Mm.
They've got to help their client get confident to say yes. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, you talked about paralysis by analysis. You see so many people get in their path. Ultimately, history has proven that all you need to do is put your name on a title. Now going forward, it's probably, you know, we don't have that same view.
Yeah.
But it also still requires you to have that courage to back the advice that you're taking and then say yes.
That's right.
Because it's easy to say no and it's really hard to say yes.
And it's based on the judgment, isn't it? I refer to that as, you know, confidence but judgment. So when is there a walk away?
Yeah.
When does the deal look good? I think it's really important.
Yeah. But you're not taking courage and taking a crazy risk.
No,
you're making a calculated decision based on research, based on evidence. And every decision is going to involve risk, but you're minimising that risk and going forward.
And you're minimising that risk because you're leveraging from the knowledge of the expert that you've engaged to help you with that.
That's right. Yeah.
If you're still going to sit on the fence, imagine what you would be like if you didn't have that expert making that judgment call and that recommendation to execute.
I always say, if why bark if you've got a dog? You know, that's the dog's job is to do that for you, and you don't have to sort of second guess what they're doing. Now, 2017, what are you thinking is on the horizon for property investors in 2017?
Okay, let me just get my crystal ball here.
Let's
work it out.
Because I've got mine over here.
2017, I think we're going to see, in the Sydney market to start with, I think we're going to see a bit more of the same. Everyone says, oh, the market's going to moderate. At the moment, there's around 20% shortage of listings, and vendors are holding back from listing, which is creating a shortage of supply, so it's keeping prices high. I think if we can get past that impasse, and there's more talk of rate rises, then we'll see the market really levelling out and just go back to a much more moderate, 2-4% kind of growth, which is much more sustainable after just crazy 4 years of massive, massive growth.
Correct.
So that would be nice. That would be the ideal. I think it's going to be tougher lending standards from the banks. Mm. But at the same time, I think there's opportunity all over the place. You know, the thing that's driving, and don't underestimate the strength of the Sydney market for this reason, it's the transport infrastructure, the health infrastructure and job infrastructure that's going in. There's just, if you drive around any part of Sydney, you'll see cranes and roadworks and hospitals. Everything's going in, and that's creating a lot of jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's underpinning the whole economy in New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
Any views on Queensland or other markets?
Look, firstly, the Brisbane market. Yep. I still think that's got plenty of legs.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to be as stellar performance as what Sydney has been.
Yep.
I think we could get to a stage in the next 2 years of nudging a double-digit growth number.
Yep.
Rents in certain areas are still pretty good. So, for example, you know, we're doing some properties up there where we're getting 6% yields. We chuck on a granny flat, we're getting 8% yields.
Yeah.
So I still think that market's got legs.
Yep.
Melbourne, I'll let you guys be the experts here talk about Melbourne. Darwin and Perth, still far too much resources linked, and I'd stay away from those markets.
Yep.
And Adelaide's just a little quiet performer under the radar. Yeah, I think if you're going to buy into Adelaide, you've got to be doing some sort of value-add or development kind of strategy.
Okay, fantastic.
Now, you're about to go out and buy this weekend, Rich, and you're about to buy another investment property to add to your portfolio. What what would it be, and what would be, you know, the type of area that you would target if you're doing that?
I'm looking purely for value-add developments myself now. So I'm currently doing a duplex development, and I'd be looking for more of those.
Yeah.
So I can decide when I've built it. Firstly, I'm creating equity by building it. So I'm getting a block of land, putting on two properties.
Yep.
I'm going to get two incomes from the one property. Torrens Title or Strata Title split them. I can decide to keep one and sell one, or sell both and make a profit. So I've got two good exit strategies.
Mm.
That's the sort of thing I'm going to look for. It's affordable. It's not over the top. It's not buying 26. So I'm going to lose my shirt.
Is it for everyone, though? Or would you do that for a new entrance?
I wouldn't do that for new entrants. Yeah, no. Yeah. I would say get 3 to 4 properties behind you before you start doing that strategy.
Make a little bit more calculated.
It's exactly. Like, don't jump in and try and do it, because it's a bit of paperwork. It's, you've got to get your head around it.
Yeah.
We help clients through that process, but don't do it as your first one. No.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think...
But that's why you're the experienced investor, and that's why you can do it.
Yeah, but particularly in the Sydney market, people say, oh, the Sydney market's had its day. It hasn't. You know, there's plenty of pockets where there's still going to be growth, and doing those value-add strategies is really good. And even just buying existing properties, you know, there's still deals to be done, you know, and we're seeing some amazing prices, you know, and people are getting revaluations and getting good equity.
Now, we've asked you to come on. Is there anything that you want to share with the viewers or listeners that, you know, that you've taken out of your many, many years, your, you know, 20-odd years of doing this, that you'd like to share with us?
You asked me, I think you asked me before, and I've just written some notes so I couldn't forget to share that. I love sharing tips with people.
Yeah, great.
Even the Uber driver on the way is picking my brains on the way here.
They all do. It's the great. And the Uber
I love drivers, it. And I'm really happy to share. So I told him I was about to do a show.
What do we got?
I think number one is stay the course.
Yep.
You know, when you're deciding on an investment journey, stay the course. Don't buy one and drop out.
Mm.
You know, the number of investors buy one or two and then, oh, it's all too hard and drop out. Stay the course would be my message there.
Yep.
Number two, work out a strategy that works for you. There's not one size fits all. It might be a duplex strategy. It might be buying a positive cash flow. It might be, I don't know, buying a house and land. There's going to be a number of different strategies, but work out which one you feel comfortable with. Some people freak out at doing a development.
Well,
don't do it. Just get someone else to help you.
Yeah.
So stick to a good strategy that lets you sleep at night. Number three, get independent advice and don't try and do everything on your own. I remember on my first property, I tried to manage it myself. All good for the first 6 months, thinking I'd save 6% until they stopped paying rent and I didn't know what to do. So don't outsource everything.
So you realise you value your time much higher rate
absolutely.
Than that
amount absolutely.
Of bucks you give to a property manager.
We've talked about learning to walk before you run. Don't try and do developments.
Love it.
And another one, don't be afraid to invest interstate. You know, think about buying properties outside of your own backyard.
Yeah.
It's really important to diversify your portfolio. And get a good spread across different property markets, because you can take advantage of different cycles. That's really important to do.
Borderless investing, they don't move in the same cycles, unfortunately. So as soon as they get can you be the lobbyist to get the uniform sort of system across the country rather than having to have exchange in New South Wales and offer an acceptance in other cities?
So, that'd be nice.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on, mate.
Thank you.
We always enjoy chatting when we catch up when we're in Sydney, so it's always good to share your insights with the viewers
fantastic.
As well, so and the listeners, isn't it, Ben? So this is the bit where Rich is probably, you know, this is the bit where he listens to our podcast and he fast forwards right to the very end.
I've got one little quick bit.
Yeah.
That is, thanks for everyone for basically writing some comments and putting some voting in. So thank you all, just the results. So Bryce got highly recommended, so basically right up there in the high bit. This year, I got runners-up. So
well done, guys. Round of applause for you both. Well done.
No, thanks to everyone. Don't worry about us. But so now we can't say 3 year in a row. Probably. Who cares? Now the real stuff.
The real stuff.
All right, let's get into it. So we're going Cherokee.
We're going to set the scene for Rich.
Rich is an avid, obviously, listener. So he has never listened to us before in his life. But that's a good thing. He doesn't need to listen to it. He's an expert. So this is where I sign off. In a some language, mate.
Fantastic.
And it's, look, you can see it.
I'm looking forward to this.
It is special.
There's only one thing more popular on this segment than this, isn't it? It's now Ivis.
Footy talk, and then Ivis as well.
Yeah, I know.
So Cherokee. We're going Cherokee. We're going Indian Cherokee this time around. And this one's an interesting one. So Do-da-da-go-hee.
Too many one-liners there for you, mate.
I don't know. Is it how? How? Hello? Do-da-da-go-hee.
Sounds good to me, mate. I, as you know, I never argue with you on this segment, but a quick shout out to our listeners who have sent us quite a few links when it comes to the wins and the losses that you've had when it comes to investing in property. So once you've had the frameworks and the principles applied and some of the things that you've done well, we appreciate you sending those in. So we're going to make that a feature in one of our upcoming episodes, aren't
definitely.
We, Ben? But I think that all of the listeners can learn from that. But until next week, Ben?
Oh,
mate, you meant to know this.
Okay. I'm a professional. Do-da-da-go-fi.
There we go. Do-da-go-fi.
Do-da-da.
Thanks, Rich.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for being on. Cheers.